You're listening to The Pulse.
Hey, hey, Fort Stewart, it's Kevin Larson coming at you with another episode of The Pulse, and we're continuing our conversation about Suicide Awareness Month, an important topic that's being featured throughout the coming days in September. I'm joined on this episode by Patrick Mitchell. He is a psychology technician at the Raider Embedded Behavioral Health Clinic, which is obviously our first Armored Brigade combat team. Patrick, thank you for joining me.
And good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you. So first, to get things started off, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got started in psychology.
Yes, sir. So I'm an Army veteran. My wife and I both were Army medics for just over 8 years. When I transitioned out of the military, I pursued an undergraduate degree in psychology and addictions, and then went on to get my master's in military social work. I'm coming from the EFMP Family Support Office prior to working now as a psychology technician for 1st Brigade EBH.
And how long have you been over there at 1st Brigade's clinic?
8 months.
8 months. And before that, you worked for a Garrison EFMP or a hospital EFMP?
Correct. Garrison ACS EFMP Family Support.
And for those of you, that's the acronym stands for. I always mess it up. What's it stand for again?
Exceptional Family Member Program.
Very good.
Program for all service members who have dependents with special needs.
Right. And that's a good podcast for another day. I'll have to remember to do that one. But right now, we're focused on the topic at hand, suicide awareness and prevention.
Yes, sir.
So you kind of touched on it a little bit. What sparked your interest in going into psychology? I mean, clearly you had a knack for caring for people because you were an Army medic. What drove you to psychology?
I think, I guess the short answer is that I myself received help after my second deployment to Afghanistan. When I came back, I found myself struggling with mental health issues. And its impact was profound in areas of my life that I hadn't expected. And I received a tremendous amount of help from those in the field that I wasn't even aware of, social workers, psychologists, counselors. And I think so when I had the opportunity, I just wanted to my next chapter to be put back into a system that helped me.
And that's very brave. That's oftentimes the first step that people don't take, realizing they have something they need help with and then seeking that help. So you are a perfect example of why it's important to speak up when you have a problem, to erase that stigma.
Thank you.
So what are your typical roles and responsibilities doing psychology over at the embedded clinic?
Sure. So as a psychology technician, typically my day-to-day looks like my mornings involved an initiative that we call targeted care, which is in crisis walk-ins where a service member can walk in to behavior health. If they are in crisis, we can offer safety stabilization. We can also engage in what's called targeted care where we can, if they're appropriate for behavior health treatment, we can schedule them follow-ups for individual or group therapies at our clinic. We can also make referrals out to other agencies on post, such as MFLAG, chaplains, TMCs. And so it's really our assessing the needs and then getting that service member to the right place so those needs can be met. We also, I co-facilitate two groups offered at 1st Brigade Behavioral Health Clinic. One is KBT, or as we call it, Kali Behavior Health Training. It is a program that is incorporates Filipino martial arts and cognitive training. And I do that as an assistant instructor with Sean Bell, who's a licensed clinical social worker. I also co-facilitate a CAMS group, which stands for Collaborative Assessment and Management of Suicidality, with our clinical team lead, Brad Singer, who's also a licensed clinical social worker.
So it's not necessarily a new initiative, but it's fairly new, the embedded health clinic in the brigade footprint, correct?
Yes, sir. So it's not necessarily an initiative, Not a new initiative, but right. Yes.
So it's been happening for how long now that we've actually had behavioral health right at essentially the point of contact, right where the soldiers are? How long has that been going on now?
Honestly, I can't speak to exactly the timeline of where it was instituted. I know that when I was serving on active duty, it was in place. So that would have been from 2009 to 2017. So it was in place then. It has been since. And it's meant to be, I suppose you could put it as a bridge or that first line between mental health professionals and the units themselves.
Perfect. And it's generally well-received by the soldiers, obviously. They know it's in their brigade footprint. They know that they have services available to help them if they find themselves in a mental crisis, correct?
Yes, that's been my experience thus far, is that, you know, when you work, even though the brigade is large, when you can come familiar with the providers that you're seeking help with, a lot of our providers are assigned to specific battalions, so they become and develop relationships with the command teams. So it really makes that that point of care and that access to care much easier.
Perfect. Now, you touched on this program that you chair, the CAMS, and that nests right into the topic that we're discussing. So what is CAMS? How do you prevent, how do you intervene with suicide using the program that you chair?
Sure. So CAMS is, again, so stands for Collaborative Assessment and Management of Suicidality. It can be offered in an individual setting with a provider and a service member or client, or for our purposes in a group setting. And so it's typically targeted for service members who have had acute or chronic suicidality, a recent suicide attempt or a past attempt. And the philosophy behind it is really to focus on drivers. And by those, I mean there are, all of us every day experience factors in our life that contribute to mental health issues like anxiety, stress, depression. But there are some factors for some who make they want to end their life. And so what we do in CAMS is we look at it as, I guess I'll say it like a medic would. If you come into an ER with a broken leg, a bruised shoulder, and a gunshot wound, I'm going to treat that gunshot wound. And so it's what is that driver or thought, behavior, theme in your life that is contributing to your suicidality. And so we find the way to treat it is that we really spend a lot of time identifying those. And we found that by identifying that, we can give the service member sort of a recipe, if you will, for their suicidality. And the more they understand it, the more they can, or the less they're blindsided about it when it happens in their life.
So essentially you're triaging a mental wound or injury and then applying the proper, like you said, recipe or tourniquet or treatment to that, so the soldier has a way forward.
Absolutely, yeah. So they, that's a great way of putting it. Stopping that, you know, whatever that specific, like we say in drivers, that is life threatening for them. And for some, it looks different for every single person. Some it's financial crisis, some it's family related, some it's job related, but it looks different for every person. And I think a key component of CAM specifically that I have learned is that the acknowledgement that those that we see have decided that suicide is in fact an option for them. And while that can be a difficult thing to accept for clinical providers, by doing that, we can then meet them where they're at and help them develop a plan that maybe we can make it option 1,000.
So a little bit of empathy goes a long way, essentially.
Yes, sir.
So how do you identify someone who's struggling with those issues? Do they come in themselves? Are they brought in by their leadership or a battle buddy? Or is there ever a moment when you're Having a session with someone who's come for a different problem, possibly, that you yourself go, aha, and identify a suicidal ideation or a trigger or something that just points toward this person is thinking about hurting themselves, that they have the symptoms.
Yes, sir. So I would say all the above they just mentioned. So we, on a sort of an acute level, when someone walks in our doors, we have tools that allow us to assess for suicide risk. Some of the just psychological assessments are such as like the GAD-7 for anxiety or the PHQ-9 for depression. But specifically the Columbia Suicide Severity Scale, the CSSRS, and BHDP, which is also a resource where we collect data on the service members using these assessments. So that's one way that we can do it, is by using our tools. Another is clinical judgment, learning a little bit about the more that you do this work, the more learning about their history, what's going on in their life, what happened in their life before, that can be contributing factors. Consultation for me as a psych tech it's very important to have consultation, because ultimately is that licensed clinical provider that is going to be making a determination in that care. And then from a policy standpoint, like you said, the service members can walk in to our clinic anytime we see walk-in crisis hours. They can be referred by their commanders for mental health evaluations. If they were to be hospitalized in a psychiatric hospitalization here at Wynn, we would be involved in their follow-up care. And so there's a lot of both policy-wise and then sort of interpersonal ways that we assess for risk of suicide.
Fantastic. We'll continue this conversation about suicide prevention and the challenges faced by both soldiers and psychiatric psychological professionals after this break.
Introducing QAnywhere, your stress-free prescription pickup solution. Just get in line with your DoD ID, select your pharmacy spot, and we'll text you when your prescription is ready. Text I am here when you're on your way, and we'll have your meds ready for pickup. Quick, efficient, and easy. For refills, call 912-435-6576. QAnywhere, because life's too short to wait.
And we're back. I'm joined by Patrick Mitchell, the psychological technician at the Rader Embedded Behavioral Health Clinic, to talk about the topic at hand, suicidal awareness and Suicidal Awareness Month, and the struggles that both soldiers and mental health providers can face with this topic. So you were talking about the ways soldiers appear in the clinic for suicidal ideation or whatever the case may be, dealing with suicide. They can walk in, their battle buddy can bring them in, a command referral, or your own assessment. Essentially, it's like triage, insight, and empathy, and recognizing what's going on with that soldier. And you mentioned that there's a possibility of inpatient care. Are soldiers concerned about the inpatient care aspect, that, oh my gosh, my career is going to be over, I'm going to get chaptered out of the Army because I have sought mental health help? Is that a problem? Can that happen? And how do you combat that stigma?
So I guess the short answer would be yes. In my experience, soldiers are concerned about that. And so those that I've seen in front of me, sometimes they will be in a crisis. They will be having thoughts of hurting themselves. And but they are concerned about how their how the response, if they were to be hospitalized or if they were to seek treatment, how it's going to impact their ability to do their job, how it's going to impact their family, how it's going to impact their team or their command, their unit, if it's going to have a negative impact on the way they're perceived and viewed by others. So that stigma, although, as I mentioned before, I was prior enlisted myself, so I have seen sort of a little bit of evolution over the last decade or two of mental health treatment in the military, but the stigma does still exist. And there are, you know, realities in the military of certain echelons of care and receiving that and the impact that can have on mission readiness. But at the same time, I think that the field of mental health has come a long way in normalizing help seeking specifically for suicide and suicide prevention.
That's good. I mean, obviously, if you are struggling with an issue, maybe making the choice that that is a choice you can't unmake, it's the best thing to do to seek help and to realize that that stigma that you might be afraid of, it doesn't really exist. It's better to seek help than to make a choice that's final.
Yes, sir.
So you talked about how you got started in the career field and some of the issues and challenges you yourself have dealt with and with the soldiers you see. What's the most rewarding aspect of your job?
I think there's been moments where when I have seen you know, a service member will come in, and I used to have this experience as a medic where oftentimes when we see them, it might be on the worst day of their life. And to see that individual, that human, that soldier, go from that, experiencing that when they walk through your door, and when they leave, they are... they have felt a sense of relief. I think that, or in those instances when I have seen someone come through my door and maybe they don't, I don't see that sense of relief in the same day, but because they were set up with established care at our clinic and now it's 6 months later and I've seen them and I can see the difference on their face. I can see the difference in their body language, the way they're moving, the way they're acting, and to be able to see sort of that outcome down the road a little bit, I think is extremely important. I think just the short answer would be that if we're talking about suicide, which unfortunately we do see quite frequently, you know, if the intervention means is between life and death, and the result is life, that's a good day.
That is absolutely a good day. What advice would you have for people that are considering coming into this profession that you obviously love and hold so dear?
I think for professionals, and we're talking about professionals here, other professionals, I think one, in mental health by itself, I think there is a degree of self-awareness that is required about for us as individuals, because there can be a two sides of a coin where you can personalize everything that comes through your door, and in some cases that empathetic response is a requisite. I think in most cases it's a requisite for what we do, but it can also lead to carrying a heavy burden on yourself. There's the flip side of that coin where, again, I saw this in emergency medicine where, when you're dealing with trauma, whether it's, of the physical or psychological kind, you can become desensitized to it. But I would say mostly, for anyone who wanted to work with the military specifically, that, this is a unique, culture. It's, there's nuance involved in any conversation that involves the military and a demographic that is essentially charged with fighting our nation's wars, and how we approach treatment for mental health is that those considerations always have to be a part of it. I think so. So if anyone wanted to getting into this field, I think having that sort of expectation and involved in their thought process.
Absolutely. And what would you say to the soldiers out there that might be struggling with this issue? What advice would you give them? And if they're looking for information or looking for help, where should they go to find out more?
Absolutely. So I would say if you need help, reach out. Reach out to your battle buddy. Reach out to your leadership, your first line, to the medics that are down at the unit level with you, and your professionals that are out there, whether it's us at EBH or if it's MFLEX, if it is your chaplain, if it is your other mental health providers out there, reach out, because that small intervention can be the difference between life and death. And you, if you want to maintain the ability to be available to your team, your family, and yourself, the resources are out there. They are there. And our positions like mine exist for that very purpose.
That's right. Absolutely. Resources are out there. Seek the help when you need it. If you're feeling like you're struggling at wit's end and you're about to make a choice that can't be undone. Well, that's about the time we have for this episode. Patrick, thank you for joining me on this episode of The Pulse to talk about this very important topic.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, yes, absolutely. If you feel suicidal, if you feel like you're about to make a choice that can't be undone, go seek help. Resources are available. The stigma doesn't exist. Remember, you can always call 988 to get in touch with someone immediately if you need immediate help when you're struggling. And if you have a little bit of time and you're looking for resources to help you with behavioral health, you can visit win.tricare.mil. So that's it for this episode of The Pulse. This is Kevin signing off.